Put those searchlights up on the tower. Right now. Move! Move!
I listen to 2ARM, 92.1 FM, in the car and at work, for great tunes and community news.
Hello, I'm Herb, and welcome to Community Spotlight. Each week I have somebody from our community or an organisation to come in and talk about themselves, their journey or their event.
And this week I travel to Dorrigo to the Food Angel Cafe and meet with Bridget Reese, one of the founders of the Dorrigo Folk and Bluegrass Festival.
Good morning, Bridget.
Good morning, Herb.
Well, thanks for coming in and talking to me.
You're very welcome.
Now, we're going to talk about your journey, your musical journey, but we're also going to talk about the Dorrigo Folk Festival, which is coming up on
24th, 25th, 26th of October.
And there's also a school beforehand, old-time school?
Old-time music school, yeah, which will run from Wednesday, Thursday, Friday for three full days,
before the
festival.
So let's go back to the start, Bridget. I think you tell me that you've been here for 24 years.
Nearly 24, yes.
And I do detect an accent. Where's that from?
From Wales originally. My family came out when I was 16. Yeah, had my 16th birthday in Australia.
So, I mean, when I think about Wales, I think about Welsh singers, famous Welsh singers.
So, yeah, and I guess that's where, for me, the musical journey started, going to chapel with my granny and grandpa.
Oh, nice. Did you take up any music instruments yourself, or you're principally a singer, or just love of music?
I sang love of music, you know, dabbled in guitar, and so now I mainly, because of hand injuries, I mainly tinkle on a clawhammer banjo.
I know how you feel. But maybe just your musical experience right at the beginning has led you to be one of the principal organisers of the Dorrigo Folk and Bluegrass Festival.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't deny that. And before we left Great Britain, I was immersed in the folk scene. So, you know, listening, to Joan Baez, to, you know, just that beautiful folk scene that was happening, and the crossovers with America at the time. So already listening to, you know, Appalachian music and that connection. I had a great grandma who was loaned us lots of broadsheet songs. And here, there you are listening to Pete Seeger, whoever it is, singing a ballad that's been around, you know, hundreds of years. And my granny's got it there, printed. She plays it on the piano, and there are 100 versions of it or something. So there were lots of connections from very early on.
Very good. Now, 24 years ago, you came to Dorrigo from Tasmania. Where else were you?
Before Tasmania, we were dairy farming in Victoria.
So you moved south and then you moved north?
Yeah.
Now, you tell me that there was a family band called the Summers Family Band. Your children. Tell me about the Summers Family Band. Who were the members of the family band?
In the band, there was, like, Alexander, Matilda, Tom and Jack. Okay, so the Summers Family Bluegrass Band started off in Tasmania. We had been in Tassie a couple of years and started to homeschool the kids. And basically they started to teach themselves instruments. So husband and I, we were making wooden toys. We had a market stall at Salamanca. And the kids very quickly realised that they could actually, you know, earn some pocket money. And so they started busking. Busking led to pocket money, which led to them buying instruments and experimenting. We knew a couple of old absolute hillbillies in the hills who played auto harp guitar, mandolin, fiddle. They were involved in the early folk dances in Tasmania, and one loved Jimmy Rogers, one loved the Carter family. So when we got to know them, I would take the kids around and we'd have afternoon tea and we'd sing songs. They would share their songs. Kids would sing a couple of new ones that they'd learnt. They'd busk at Salamanca. People would see them. I don't know, Tassie in those places, the La Hobart Library was like a mecca for vinyl, old recordings. And so, yeah, we were just pulling out records. The kids were listening to, you know, way back, they were listening to Monroe Brothers, Charlie, you know, Bill before. Yeah, very early music, and they just sit there and play it.
Well, it doesn't surprise me, though, because I know that there's a lot of traditional instruments, particularly clawhammer banjo, a lot of people making out of, it's a bit of fraternity in Tasmania.
Yeah, there's, making, well, across Australia. Yeah. Yeah, there's so many. We've got so many lovely instrument makers now.
So you came to Dorigo, and you had the Summers Family Band already established. And how old were they, were the kids?
The kids, when we came to Dorigo, the youngest, Alex, was probably seven, eight. Matilda, yeah, 10.
Dorigo was a great, I suppose, choice because it's central to a lot of other festivals around the place. You got the Tamworth Country Music Festival, I suppose. And it's probably similar. It is a very dairy farming type of climate, isn't it?
Yeah, mountains, rivers, yeah.
So the draw was probably quite similar from Victoria through to Tasmania to Dorigo, I suppose.
And hills, connection with music.
With the environment and the climate. Now, we'll go to Jack was 17, and he might have said something to you about a festival. What was that about?
So, basically, that is as simple as, Mum, there's no festival in Dorigo, let's start one.
So that was in 2002. He was 17. And what was your first festival? 300 people or something? And how did you get that off the ground?
Well, Jack basically took all the initiative. He knew he'd have to have insurance. He knew he'd have to have other people helping him, so he went to the Arts Council, and the Arts Council of the Dorigo agreed to auspice the festival and did so for the following 10 years. The curation and direction was basically under Jack, going to a few key members of the Arts Council, letting, you know, and helping them to understand what we'd need to put a festival in place.
Probably without little experience.
Without little experience. Jack was one of, the entrepreneurial kids.
But the focus of the talent that you were drawing into the first 10 years of the Dorigo Folk Festival was internal Australian and New Zealand talent mostly?
Yeah.
And maybe the occasional wandering minstrel?
Yes, yeah, from overseas. Jack knew from the very start, it was a very early discussion, that we couldn't just call it a bluegrass festival. We would have to broaden it, fit it into his love of music as well, not just straight line bluegrass. So folk and bluegrass festival. And that enabled Jack and myself in future years to bring in to the festival program artists, musicians into the, you know, you bring a great jazz group or a great jazz player in, or someone who's been playing folk music, singing, songwriting for years, put them in a mix with some exceptional bluegrass players, and you've just got so much
magic.
So much happening, you know.
It blows me away every time I come, is the musicianship.
Yes.
Of the bluegrass and folk players.
Yeah, and the connection, they connect, they're a part of each other. I mean, the music scene, that folk and bluegrass music scene compared to somewhere like the US is just so different. So events like this are really important for connection of our artists and performers.
Surely the Dorigo Council also would have seen the number of people that have built over time. So you started with 300.
We started
in the first two. How many are we talking about after 10 years?
Look, we're talking up to 1,600, which isn't a great number, but the first festival was held at the showgrounds, and that's where we hold the festival.
And it's limited today as well. You've got camping.
So it's what we can do there is limited. But it's also how our festival is. It's a small boutique festival. It was never meant to attract thousands and thousands with huge stages and huge sound. It's an acoustic music festival where we offer patrons a chance to come, connect, be part of that community, but to listen to the music, to be able to sit in a venue and listen, the musician is playing. And that's something that the musicians feed back to us. One of the best festivals, because we know we are being heard.
And appreciated,
yeah.
Yep. And it's a totally volunteer thing. Has it always been volunteer?
Always volunteer, yeah.
At this point, then, we must acknowledge the ongoing commitment from all the volunteers over the 23 years that the Dorrigo Folk and Bluegrass Festival has been an active part of the music scene, but an active part of the Dorrigo community. So thanks to all the volunteers, both previous and current. You know who you are. Without your commitment and your volunteering and your hours and putting it in for the festival wouldn't be what it is today, and it probably wouldn't have survived.
Yeah. So in 2011, you separated from Dorrigo mm-hmm. Council and you became mm-hmm. incorporated under your own mm-hmm. under your own incorporation,
mm-hmm.
under the New South Wales Government incorporation mm-hmm. scheme,
yep.
which has all its own pitfalls.
Yes.
And then you had to go, yeah. you got a grant from New South Wales Tourism.
Yeah. The grant just enabled us to bring over our first overseas artists. And we're talking, like, we are going back. We're going back 14 years, 15 years. So we're talking a lot easier accessibility for artists to get to Australia and to play compared to these days, where it's getting extremely hard for a festival like us to include that in the budget.
Yeah, yeah.
It's still a priority, but it's...
Well, without the volunteers, you couldn't do it.
No. Oh, no. And during the weekend, I mean, we bring in almost 100 volunteers over the weekend to help.
Yeah. And tell me about COVID. What happened during COVID?
Mm-hmm. So COVID, we planned a festival, and then it was basically, you know, one of my daughters, Angela, who's been heavily involved in the festival, we thought that we would still like to have a presence during the COVID years. So we decided, with some of the overseas artists that we were already negotiating with and some of our Australian artists, we did a series of visual online concerts, which were watched by some, but, you know, I mean, they didn't bring us any money. I think that's when we lost money. We lost a bit of money. But we felt that it was important just to have that connection. You know, for a festival that's ran annually for so long, there we do have that community out there. Mm. And we wanted to reach out. We just wanted to give them something.
Well, I think the Black Gully Festival, uh-huh. they did exactly the same thing. It was yeah. reasonably successful. They had
yeah.
acts
yeah.
that were videoed in a mm-hmm. spot in town and people watched it.
Yeah.
But we got through COVID.
Yeah.
And just after COVID, there was that very wet year.
Uh-huh, yes.
Which I came, and I'm glad I bought my rubber boots.
we joke that we should have set up a stall or had gumboots and raincoats, umbrellas as merch.
But that's Dorrigo.
The town sold out, I think.
Yeah, I think they did. But that's Dorrigo.
That's Dorrigo. I mean, you just don't know what to expect in Dorrigo.
Well, so, it was a test on my camper van.
Okay. I hope it came through.
No, it was a test. So it did leak a little bit, but yeah. I fixed the leaks when I went home, and every time I've come back, it's been fine.
Yeah.
So that brings us to this year's mm-hmm. Dorrigo Folk and Bluegrass Festival, 2025.
Yeah.
What have we got planned?
Okay, so I have been busy writing articles. And one of the things that becomes really apparent to me is that we have, it's our format. We know what we're doing. So as the programmer, I feel very privileged to have a fantastic lineup of artists, which are on the website.
Just tell us a couple.
Yep. Starting the week off, we're really delighted that Mike Compton's coming back to tutor at the Old Time Music School, and he'll be coming back from the States, and he'll be at the festival with a lovely lady called Laura Brusinger, who's going to be playing with him under the title of the Knackered Ramblers. We've got Scott Cook coming back from Canada to the festival, which is pretty exciting. We've got lots of really nice, good Australian bluegrass. So we've got the Barra from Queensland. We've got High Street Drifters coming up from Victoria.
Oh, nice, they're good.
We've got Geese Fly South, which includes Nick from Mustard Courage.
Yes.
And they're a bluegrass band down south Cobargo. So excited to see some of those players again at the festival. Lots of really good singer-songwriters coming. We've got, like, from Australia.
It just goes on.
I find it really hard. When I write articles, I say that all our performers are headliners. I find it really hard to just pull out six or
Well,
10.
As I said before, the musicianship is so strong at this festival, it is hard to pick one out.
One of the things that I get really excited about is like doing things like we did last year. We did the 8-string social club, where basically one of our great musicians, Paddy Montgomery, put together a concert where we featured all the mandolin players at the festival. Got them up on stage. There was a lot of improvisation, and it was just magic.
Yeah, I saw it. It was great.
Same with the singer songwriters. You put a little bunch of singer songwriters up on stage and just watch the magic happening, the interaction.
You're the artistic director.
Yep.
Of the event, and has that been your role most of the time?
Yes. Yeah.
But this year you've got Kathy, who's helping you with comms and media.
Kathy's, yeah, we've got, this year we have 3 new committee members.
Are they new people to Dorigo, or people that just come forward from the community?
Kathy's actually from down on the coast, but members of her family have enjoyed the festival and the Old Time Music School, and she's been coming to the festival for a couple of years. So she just felt that she wanted to help to contribute to this festival.
Now, tell me about how people can buy their ticket.
As simple as poster and clicking on the QR code.
QR code on a poster.
Which takes you straight to ticketing and the website.
So there's a Facebook page?
There's a Facebook page, there's an Instagram. And right now, both on Instagram and Facebook, we're popping up all our performers with a little bit of a bio and just introducing them to would-be patrons.
So people can come and buy a day ticket.
They can buy day tickets, they can buy a weekend ticket, they can camp before or after the festival for a night if they like. Coming for the whole weekend is, I think, one of the best ways to enjoy the festival. Yeah.
I sort of come in on the day before and leave on the day after.
It's
a nice thing.
And over the weekend, like, we have the cafe breakfasts down in town, so in Food Angel, for example.
And you have musicians coming in and play while people are having breakfast.
Yeah, and they are performers from the festival, the lineup, which just gives the town, for those people who haven't experienced the festival, just gives them a taste of what does actually happen, and maybe entices a few to come up and have a better look.
Now, you mentioned the role of bringing children and younger performers into the festival. Tell me about that.
Well, all along, I think, Jack as a young kid himself, realising just how important it is to have those opportunities to engage with musicians who've, you know, been playing for a few years or have so much to offer, that he really wanted Dorigo Folk and Bluegrass Festival to do that, to provide that opportunity. So over the years, we encourage younger bands to apply, and they come to the festival, and they could be up on stage with someone like Jake Joloff or Michael Daves, or they have the opportunity at the festival to interact and maybe jam, attend their workshops, talk to them off stage. You know, our performers are there all weekend, and it's not huge, so there's still a possibility for patrons and performers to interact and to share, you know, whether it's a silly story about a guitar or just pick a few notes, you know, well, what was happening in that song? Can you just show me that again?
What you're talking about is a breeding ground for young musicians. There's no barriers, I suppose, to actually performing with fantastic musicians who have been in the game for a long time, and having the younger up-and-coming musicians see how it all goes. Because it can be daunting for people to get on stage and perform and show what they've got.
Yeah.
Look, it's fantastic that you're being encouraging younger performers throughout the whole time. I think that's the future of folk and bluegrass, and particularly our local performers, getting those to come up and work their craft or develop their craft.
Yeah.
I think we might wrap it up there, Bridget. Thank you for all you've done for music, the Folk and Bluegrass Festival. You're a gem in Dorigo for your efforts and your family's efforts. We won't forget the Summers Family Band. Well, thanks to them for being a part of the first instigation, and Jack for being a part of that, bringing the Dorigo Folk and Bluegrass, which is very close to my heart. And I'll enjoy it this year in the 2025 festival at the end of October.
Well, that's Community Spotlight.
Broadcast, then podcast. If you missed it or want to hear it again, then visit our webpage, 2arm.net.au/podcast. I listen to 2ARM 92.1 FM in the car and at work, for great tunes and community news.